This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
On another line, we go to the guest line. It's Teddy's boy from Houston, Lance Zierlein, NFL Media, the guy who writes all of those reports that you read on NFL.com. He has the draft tracker. He has the mock drafts.
Been and doing his, it a long time.
And his Christmas is next Thursday, I guess. Lance, how are we doing this afternoon?
Hey, Lance.
Good. My Christmas is kind of a combine also. I have a few Christmases.
I can see that. But, yeah, when this draft is over, buddy, I'm sure you just take a long, nice vacation.
That's the biggest Christmas of all.
I bet. I mean, if you don't know Lance's work, go check it out, NFL.com, the draft tracker. Lance has been studying football players for as long as I've known him, so for over 15 years, and he knows what the hell he's talking about. And Lance, look, the Patriots here at number four, it's an interesting kind of position to be in. There's a lot of speculation that they could get. There's a lot of players in play maybe for the Patriots. But I want to talk about just Travis Hunter. He seems to be maybe one of the more polarizing guys. Just your thoughts on Travis Hunter, Lance, as a player. Can he play offense and defense in the NFL? And do you think the Patriots have a chance at all at getting him at number four?
Well, look, can he? Does he have the ability to? Yes. I gave him a grade as a wide receiver, and I gave him a grade as a cornerback. Two separate grades. They're both very high. He would have been a top wide receiver in the draft, and I have him as a top cornerback in the draft. So he has the ability to. Ted, I think that's a better question for you because you know about the physicality of the league. And you know, it's my belief that you'd be crazy to play him both ways simply because it's just too much stress physically on him. I think the first thing teams are going to do is test him in terms of being able to tackle and support the run. He's not the biggest corner in the world. So if he does play cornerback, you know, I think it's a big advantage to have someone like Travis Hunter on your defense. He's got insane instincts and his ball skills are just top notch. I mean, so he's going to have better ball skills than a lot of the wide receivers he goes up against when he's a corner. You just don't have that happen in the NFL very rarely. Do you have a cornerback with those skills? Now, what I would do is play him full-time corner, and I'd give him, you know, 8 to 10 snaps at the wide receiver position. I think, depending on the team, I think there are some teams that will do it the other way around. And I've talked to some teams who kind of view him as a wide receiver first and a corner second. So it's going to depend on the team. Can he do it? Yeah, but he's played 2,600 snaps the last 2 years. I mean, that is an insane number of snaps. Most of the guys that I study who have started for 4 years, they played in the neighborhood of 2,600 to 3,000 snaps. Travis Hunter's done it in 2 years. Now, you know, not all of them were the most physical snaps, granted. But I just think in the NFL, he's going to have too much value to risk his durability over the course of a 17 and potentially 18-game season.
So, Lance, that noise you might hear right now is New England and all of Patriots Nation praying that Shedeur Sanders blows the New York Giants away, allowing him to go third overall, crazy enough leaving Abdul Carter available to the Patriots at four. But in the
I think you got to be careful. It may be Travis Hunter there. I know everyone's plugging in. Travis Hunter too, but I don't think that's over in Cleveland from people I've talked to. So I think Travis Hunter could end up being in play at four. Here's the problem: you're really going to take Shedeur Sanders over a guy like Abdul Carter or Travis Hunter? I mean, I'd have a hard time. I don't have a high enough grade personally on Shedeur. I've been looking at these guys for a long time. I haven't talked to any teams who have that kind of grade on them. It would get down to a desperation move by the Giants. I think it's a CYA move where they, you know, where Joe Shane and Brian Daboll say, look, if we win eight games, seven games with Russell Wilson, we're fired. If we win seven with Shedeur Sanders, eight games, we can say, hey, there's light at the end of the tunnel. Maybe you save your job. But when it comes to just picking the best football player, boy, that is going to be really tough to pass on a guy like Abdul Carter or Travis Hunter in that spot. However, you know, and I've got a couple friends who work there with the Patriots, and so I'm cheering for Shedeur to go in that top three, just so you guys have a better shot at one of the top players on the board. But I think the smartest football minds are going to make the sanest decisions, and I think New England's going to be left with what I think is a pretty tough spot at number four.
Lance Zierlein, NFL Network, NFL Media, joining us. He has the draft tracker on NFL.com. He has all the info, knows all these players. And for that reason, I'm going to ask him, is Will Campbell a starting left tackle in the National Football League?
Yeah, he's a starter. I think the question is he going to be a starter for the next 10 years, or does he bump down to guard? I remember having the same concern with Jonah Williams coming out of Alabama. We talked about whether or not he was a tackle. And my whole point was, well, he can get guys blocked, so I don't care. I think Will Campbell can get guys blocked. I think there are some issues in pass pro that he shows in terms of, you know, with timing his hands. I mean, he's got – those short arms mean there's little – my dad was an NFL O-line coach. And one of the things he always preached to me is that arm length is not overrated. People will tell you it's overrated. It is not overrated. You've got to be able – I mean, if you have shorter arms, you have a smaller margin for error. So your timing has to be impeccable. You've got to really be smart with how you feint and shoot your hands. You got to change up your pass sets and your attacks so that you keep – you know, you really become a pitcher who has to keep somebody off balance in the batter's box. And so that's why I think Will Campbell has got – that it could take a little while for him. And, you know, frankly – I think Kelvin Banks has some of the same issues. He's too reactive as a pass pro guy. He's not proactive enough. He's not jumping out on top of guys with his pass sets. He had a great game as a freshman against Will Anderson. I mean, an absolutely great game against Will Anderson. And he's never been as good ever since then. So I think that's the big concern, is that he hasn't gotten better in pass protection, but I think he has that ability. The thing with Will Campbell is Will Campbell is a physical, tough, mean guy, mean in a good way. And I think that when you draft him, you're getting a certain culture in your locker room, and you're getting a guy that, worst case scenario, I think can run, bump down inside and play some guard. He's got to prove he can bend in the hips a little bit better. But let me tell you something. He can move people around as a run blocker. So that's one of the things I really like. I think you could start him at left tackle and eventually maybe move him to right tackle in the future if you need it. But Patriots are so desperate at left tackle, you kind of have to take what you can get right now.
That's interesting. That's been the big debate. And, Lance, I've been saying arm length matters just because I got my arms measured. You know, they've been measuring arms for 50 years at the combine, so it's got to count for something, right? So it's going to be fascinating. You know,
first man in wins most of the time. I mean, so – you got to get in first.
Yeah, exactly. What about guys? There's other people, offensive weapons, you know, the Patriots, or maybe, you know, people are thinking that they might get like a Tyler Warner, Warren, excuse me, or, you know, the great running back, Ashton Jeanty. What about those players that are kind of like, you know, rated in the top 10, top 12, that could maybe the Patriots reach at four? Do you see Tyler Warren or an Ashton Jeanty worthy of a fourth overall pick?
Boy, I think Jensen's special. I think he's the best player in the draft. He's the highest rated player I have. Now, he's not going first because he's a running back. But, you know, when you talk about Jensen, I think he's somebody that can be special. The question is, are the Patriots far enough along where they want to draft a running back? I don't have a problem with taking a really special running back and then having them for a five-year, you know, the fifth-year option, and then a six-year with franchise tag, and then potentially a seventh year with a franchise tag. 7 years, do you want a running back more than 7 years? Not usually. So I don't think it's a bad idea. I just don't know if the Patriots are far enough along. However, I will throw this in here as a caveat. I also think these special running backs are good to grab for young quarterbacks because it takes pressure off of them. So in that regard, I'd love it. I think the key here for me is trade back if you can. If you have a clump of two or three tackles you like, it's trade back a few spots. You hope somebody gets excited about, you know, all the mock drafts putting Ashton Jeanty at number six to the Raiders, and you get somebody maybe that says, hey, we want Ashton Jeanty, so we got to get ahead of six. So where do we go, either four or five? I think that's the real key, is you have to hope that a team gets excited to trade up and go grab Jeanty, which would mean the Patriots could move back and still pick up a tackle and pick up an additional draft pick. So, you know, yeah, I think both guys are – I'd love to see both guys over there in New England. Would I like to see them at four? I'd like to trade back and get an extra pick and intake them maybe.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of trade back as well, and that definitely seems like it could be on the table, Lance.
On the table, but who wants to come up, honestly? I mean,
yeah,
this is not a draft where people are trading up. That's going to be the problem, is I don't know that there's a lot of players you trade up for in this draft into the top seven or eight picks. It gets juicy at about pick 10 to about pick, you know, 36. That's really the hot zone in this draft.
Yeah, flat landscape, some have called it, from 4 to 12 or 4 to 20. Who are maybe two or three of the potential offensive difference makers you could see the Patriots targeting either top of the second round, or if they got brave on night one and decided to trade back up to the tail end of the first round?
Well, so I think if you really got brave, I mean, you got a lot of different needs. I think edge rush would be, can I pick any position here?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Because you guys need just about everything.
Oh, yeah.
I would say,
ouch, babe.
I would say,
true, though.
Well, look, if you're willing to take the shot, Josh Simmons has the best left tackle profile in this draft. The knock on him is there's a real maturity issue, and he's coming off of a patella injury that, even though it's been cleared, I think there's some concern about that. But if you were able to trade back in, and if you thought that Vrabel and his staff, you know, could get the most out of Simmons and get him, I mean, listen, it's an Ohio State and Ohio State connection there. If you thought you could get that, that would be an unbelievable steal, grabbing him if he started sliding into the mid-20s. It's a gamble because you don't know where the football character is. But if you believe in Mike Vrabel and getting the most out of him, and I watched him work down here in Houston, I thought he was unbelievable getting the most out of players. If you believe in that, then to me, trading in and getting Josh Simmons could end up being a home run out of Ohio State. I think another move you could look at early in the second round is Mason Taylor, the tight end, Jason Taylor's son, mm-hmm. out of LSU. I think he is going to really, you know, the talk is about Tyler Warren, it's about Colston Loveland. Those are the two tight ends. But to me, I think Mason Taylor, the way he moves, he has such great football movement. He has such great football IQ. I think the sky is the limit for him. And to me, he can end up being one of the real stars of this draft in the early second round. So I think that's a player that you could get your young quarterback a target, an easy-to-find target. One of the best things we've seen over the years, Phillip Rivers, for example, with Antonio Gates, is Troy Aikman with Jay Novacek. Give a young quarterback a good high volume target tight end, and you can really hasten their development much more quickly. So those are a couple names that I'd take a look at.
Lance, before we let you go, you mentioned this team needs everything, and you're right. That's why a lot of people locally are looking at this draft and saying, not only do you need a starting left tackle, you probably need to get 3, 4, 5 other players that at least contribute. Maybe mm-hmm. a couple of them are starters. Is that realistic in this draft class? Is there enough talent on the board where this team could bring home enough players to really change it in one class?
Well, so it depends on the position. It's really deep at edge. I think you can find a starter at edge in the third, maybe fourth round. Defensive tackle, same thing. It's a deep defensive tackle draft. It's very deep at running back. So if you wanted, you know, if you wanted to find a running back that's going to get a decent amount of carries for you from a production standpoint, I think running back is going to be easy to find. I think edge is going to be pretty easy to find as long as you do it inside the first three rounds. And I think defensive tackle is going to, I think the second round is one of the sweet spots for the really good defensive tackles as well. So, yeah, I do think with what the Patriots need, you know, you need more than one offensive lineman, obviously. So it's not great at guard. It's okay at guard once you get past the second round. So I think that, you know, the concern is if you pass on tackle with your first pick, you're in a little bit of a quandary here, because the level of talent at tackle goes way down once you hit the second round. So that's my concern, is I'd love to get a tackle at the seventh or eighth pick, more so than the fourth pick. That's why the trade back is to me, that's going to be the first thing on my agenda, would be to trade back and still target one of the tackles we like. If not, you may not get the left tackle you need. There's not a lot of legit left tackles once you hit the second round. And you have to wait into the third round. Anthony Belton's a big, enormous left tackle, but I don't know if he's going to be a good starter right off the bat as a third or maybe even early fourth round pick. So that's the concern there. If you don't do it at four, you could get yourself in trouble.
He is Lance Zierlein, NFL media. He knows as much about these prospects that you'll hear next week as anyone.
He certainly does.
Read his write-ups on NFL.com. Follow his draft tracker. Follow him on social media. Lance, look forward to the next week and that vacation you get after that.
Thanks, buddy.
Good luck, guys. We'll see.
Appreciate you, Lance.
Appreciate you, Lance. Thank you.
That was there was some optimism in that. There was some pessimism in different areas, some optimism and some interesting things there. We got the list yesterday. We know who'll be at the NFL draft, and that'll not only include Will Campbell and guys who could become Patriots, it'll include Ted Johnson, Andy Hart, and WEEI Afternoons. We'll talk about that next here on WEEI.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
Optimize your nutrition this year with Factor, America's number one ready-to-eat meal service. Factor's fresh, never-frozen meals are dietitian-approved, ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from 40 weekly options across 8 dietary preferences like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Eat smarter at factormeals.com/listen50 and use code LISTEN50 for 50% off plus free shipping on your first box. Factormeals.com/listen50, code LISTEN50.
Dollar Shave Club delivers premium razors without premium prices. Get close, comfortable six-blade shaves, Swift Rinse and four blades for thicker hair, and translucent shave butter for precision. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun. Use promo code HOMERUN for 20% off.
Hey everyone, summer is just around the corner and May's packed with reasons to celebrate. Whether you're firing up the grill for a backyard barbecue, soaking up the sun by the pool, or enjoying a long weekend with friends and family, Whole Foods Market makes it easy to kick off the season with great everyday prices on high quality favorites, from fresh produce to grilling essentials. Let's dive into the savings and get your summer fun started right. Personally, I love how easy Whole Foods Market makes it to pull together a last-minute gathering. I was there recently picking up a few things for a cookout, and those yellow low-price signs are no joke. I grabbed their No Antibiotics Ever Ground Turkey and a few 365 by Whole Foods Market Organic salad kits. Honestly, so convenient and surprisingly affordable. The quality is still everything you'd expect, but I definitely felt like I was scoring a deal, which I love. Plus those yellow sale signs, I make a beeline for them now. Especially when I saw strawberries on sale, we went through two cartons in one day. Save on May celebrations with great everyday prices at Whole Foods Market.
We welcome in on WEEI Field Yates of ESPN joining us here on Jones and Keefe. Field, thanks for taking the time. We appreciate it.
No problem, guys. Hope you guys are doing well.
We are. We're looking over some of the work you put out recently, your draft coverage throughout the months and days leading up to the draft. A couple of days ago, you and Mel Kiper traded off picks. 1, 2, 3, 4, you'd take turns. Kiper had the Patriots pick at 4, but let's give you the same scenario. He went with Will Campbell at 4. Ward's gone, Hunter's gone, Carter's gone, Patriots are on the clock. He went Will Campbell. Who would you go with?
Yeah, I'm going Will Campbell as well, and I understand that probably your guys' show has focused as much on Will Campbell as maybe any prospect not named Travis Hunter or Abdul Carter during this pre-draft process. You know, and I understand why he can be a lightning rod for some because of the fact that drafting a tackle who has 32 5/8 inch or 33-inch arms would make him an outlier relative to NFL left tackle standards. You know, guys, I think I've just consistently seen Will a little bit differently throughout the process. You know, Mel and I have at times gone back and forth on whether he would do the same thing that I would. But I think the way that I look at the arm length dilemma for a player is I start by how does the tape look? How does it look against the top competition that you can see at the college football level? And while it's not the NFL, obviously, the SEC is as close as you'll get to an NFL representation at the college football level. And no prospect is perfect, but on the rare, and I do mean rare occasion that Will Campbell looked vulnerable at the collegiate level, I didn't think very often the root of that issue was his arm length. I don't see guys consistently getting into the chest of Will Campbell, which is one of the primary concerns you have about an offensive tackle who lacks premier length. Their defensive end is just saying, hey, we're going to get our hands on you first, and no matter how good your footwork is or no matter how strong your base is, we're just going to find a way to work our way through or around you. I didn't see that with Will. He's one of the cleanest prospects in the entire class, truly, on top of the fact that he plays a premium position that the Patriots really need, super battle-tested, and he's an off-the-charts kid. I think if we've sort of followed what Mike Vrabel has been preaching throughout the few times he has spoken since becoming the Patriots head coach, maybe a handful of times now, every trait that he has mentioned, I would say, aligns with what Will Campbell brings to the table. So maybe others wouldn't be enthused by it, but if I'm the Patriots and Will Campbell's the pick at number 4, I'm actually feeling pretty darn good, especially in the context of this draft class, which is very different than last year, where blue chippers were all over the place in the first 12 to 15 picks, and then the depth really fell off. This year, there's just not nearly as many superstar blue chip caliber players, but there's a lot of guys in rounds 3 to 5 that will probably make your roster and compete early on in their careers.
Is the gap between Will Campbell and the next offensive lineman as big as, say, Ashton Jeanty and the next running back, or Ty Warren and the next tight end, and some of those other top end players?
I think the biggest gap from player 1 to player 2 at the positions that you just asked is for me, it's clearly running back. I think Ashton Jeanty, and we can debate whether running backs are even worth taking that early in the draft. But if you're just asking me in the context of, like, how many spots on the big board do I have to move down before I get to RB2 relative to offensive tackle 2 or tight end 2? It's clearly running back. I've got Amarian Hampton out of North Carolina as 26th overall on my board. So I think he's going to go somewhere in the first round. To me, any sooner than pick 20 or so would be a little bit of a rich spot for him to land. But I think given the fact that teams from 20 to 32 probably feel like they can be the equivalent of what Philadelphia and Baltimore and Green Bay were last year, where they were very good teams where a running back puts them over the top, as opposed to a struggling team where a very good running back just helps them be more entertaining on Sundays. So I think 20 to 32 is a range for Amarian Hampton, but I feel like Jeanty is in a whole different stratosphere of player. And this guy he's unbelievable. I mean, I think he has the clearest path to becoming a Pro Bowler as a rookie, and that's independent of where he lands as an NFL player. Like, he could go to the Raiders at 6, he could go to the Bears at 10, he can go to the Saints at 9, and I'd like his odds because he's that special of a player, and you know, you would imagine that whoever drafts him very high is going to be motivated to lean on Ashton Jeanty a lot, since we know that, A, running backs assimilate to the NFL a whole lot easier, and B, they don't often last that long relative to other positions, so you might as well get maximum value early.
So you mentioned your big board and the gap at running back. Mason Graham to Membu is 3-8. At tight end, you have Warren at 7 and Loveland at 11. So those are much tighter. You can see Field Yates' full big board. He tweeted it out today, at Field Yates on Twitter. You have Abdul Carter, 2. It's interesting. Here in New England, we spent a lot of time talking about could he fall to 4. It feels like Travis Hunter is more of a pipe dream there. There are some whispers. I think Bob McGinn at least started this. I'm curious to hear what you've heard on Abdul Carter and questions about his football character. Is that a concern for you on any level? Work ethic, the way he practices, his love for the game, et cetera, that sort of thing. Is that a concern with Abdul Carter?
It's not for me to the point that I would bypass him at number 4 if he gets there for New England. I'd say that much. I haven't ruled out Abdul Carter at number 2 to Cleveland. I think there's a lot of momentum for Travis Hunter, but I don't think that it's a complete done deal. I sort of feel like the only thing that's a done deal right now in the draft is Cam Ward going number 1 overall to Tennessee. But no, I don't do that. That's not the information I've received on Abdul Carter. And I mean, it didn't seem to prevent him from being an incredible player these past couple of seasons, 3 seasons at Penn State, 2 of which he was playing in a variety of different spots. Last year, he played primarily as an edge rusher, had those 12 sacks. And I mean, listen, I guess this is the time of the year that we hear this kind of stuff more often, but a guy who probably could have sat out last season, or maybe like sat out half the season after he had showed what he was as an edge rusher, also played through a pretty serious shoulder injury late in the year when he didn't necessarily have to, right? And we see guys tap out of bowl games and tap out of late portions of the season all the time. And Abdul Carter kept going for Penn State. I think that speaks to the person that he is and speaks to the person that, or the kind of player that he is. And he's an unbelievable player too. Like, the Patriots have obviously invested a lot on defense already this offseason, and there's a glaring left tackle need that must be addressed at some point, wide receiver as well. But if Travis Hunter goes 2 to the Browns and Shador Sanders goes 3 to the Giants, if I'm the Patriots, I'm doing the metaphorical sprint the cart into the commissioner and take Abdul Carter right away.
Well, Phil, you mentioned Shador Sanders, and it feels like from mock draft to mock draft, looking at everybody, there's no real true consensus on where Sanders could go. As a Patriots fan, all we're hoping is he goes 2 or 3. Right now, with a week to go before the draft, what kind of likelihood would you give that Sanders is a top 3 pick?
I think it's possible. I really do. And I think that there have been some people that have been saying, hey, this late quarterback workout for Shador Sanders and then Tyler Shuck and Jalen Milroe is part and parcel for the quarterback evaluation. And that, I think, has been true in some occasions in the past. I just think it also speaks to the idea that this team is still trying to figure this out, right? And I frankly, maybe I should, but I can't recall. Maybe you guys do offhand. Like last year around this time, did you guys recall, hey, the Patriots are down in North Carolina working out Drake May, or LSU working out Jaden Daniels, to see whichever of those two falls, whether they be like truly enamored by the player? It sounds like the Giants are still sort of doing some information gathering. And I get it. This might just be posturing, and they might be trying to create the perception to generate some sort of leverage. I'm just not so sure what kind of leverage they have, because I'm not sure that any team is going to move up to try to get Shador Sanders either ahead of number 3 or at number 3 to trade away from the Giants. So I think it's possible. You know, I fear that assigning like probabilities to draft happenings probably ends up providing a lot less value than it does like substance. But I don't know if it's 50-50. I probably lean more towards them not taking Shador Sanders at number 3. But a week ago, I would have told you, hey, it's just going to be Abdul Carter or Travis Hunter, whichever falls there. I feel that it's more likely they take Shador Sanders at 3rd overall compared to where I was at this time last week.
Field Yates, ESPN. You can check out his big board, top 200 prospects at ESPN. You can follow him on Twitter, at Field Yates. You highlighted earlier this week teams that could move up or down in the draft. You put the Patriots in their own category as a team that could trade up or down. I'm assuming you mean down from 4, up from 38. The whole climate in this draft you hear is that no one's really looking to move up, at least early. Is that the kind of thing the Patriots could capitalize on at 38? Maybe they get stuck at 4 because no one's looking to move up. But if no one's looking to move up later on, could they really capitalize and get a good deal to move up from 38 to, I don't know, the mid to early 20s?
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at, is a couple of teams to earmark, you know, the Vikings and the Commanders, who are at 24 and 29 respectively, and they have a combined 9 picks in this draft. So they're very bereft of draft capital right now because of various trades that they have made. And I mentioned earlier how, you know, the meat of this draft is, I would say, you know, call it like players 65 or 70 to like 125 or 150. My top 200 that I dropped this morning on ESPN.com. I'm telling you guys, like, every time I've opened the document back up and I've just sort of scanned through, I'll be there at 140 and I'll say, like, how is that guy 140 when I'm not even sure he's better than 110? And then I go back and I look at 110 and I think that guy's better than 85. It's kind of a pretzel in the middle of the draft because it is so much of beauty in the eye of the beholder. But for the Patriots, when you do have such obvious needs right now and you have this aggressive mentality that is sort of prevailed all off season, maybe you do take advantage of it where, you know, at the back end of the first round, if one of these offensive tackles is still there, you know, the Commanders are not a team that needs a left tackle. The Vikings aren't a team that needs a left tackle. They might be motivated to move down to pick up some extra draft capital and turn their 9 combined picks into 10, 11, or 12, right? So if I'm the Patriots, you know, seeing how this team has attacked the offseason, the aggressive spending in free agency, the eventual acquisition of Stephon Diggs, which also in free agency, but it was, you know, an offer that, you know, to my knowledge, it was at least it has been publicly, no other offer has been publicly reported that Stephon Diggs received this offseason. So it feels like the Patriots' mindset is, hey, whatever it takes to get something done, get it done. And, I, you know, the Patriots have a lot of work to do, and the Bills are so clearly the best team in the division by, I think, a notable gap. But right now, if I'm the Patriots, I'm looking at this division and saying, I can leapfrog to the second best team in the division if some of our stuff goes right. Drake May makes the step I think many people anticipate him to make. And then Mike Vrabel has the impact that I think he's expected to make based off of his head coaching history. So the idea of moving up from 38 to late in round one to me is something that if I'm the Patriots is very intriguing if the board falls in a specific way.
All right, for the Patriots in round one, what would be your best case scenario and what would be your worst case scenario?
Best case scenario would probably be one of Abdul Carter or Travis Hunter falling to 4. And yeah, I think, you know, they're really picking 3, right? So it's really because the Titans, Cam Ward, that's done. And the Patriots obviously would not be in a quarterback market. I guess the only other, I've in my own brain kind of landed on the Patriots taking one of Abdul Carter, Travis Hunter, and Will Campbell. That's where I have landed. It's not that I have their draft board. I'm just using my own sort of instincts and the positional need and where I have these players rated. So the number of outcomes I've considered is pretty low. It's 2 kind of. So I guess by default, that makes worst case scenario not one of those guys being available. But, you know, Will Campbell's the 5th player on my board. Like, I don't feel like this is some, you know, catastrophic, that would be some sort of catastrophic event or reality for the Patriots if that's how things fall. Like, it's a huge need for the Patriots, and I think is a darn good player. So, you know, the worst case scenario, I think, is probably, you know, winning that game in week 18 where you're in this setup just in the first place. Right. But, you know, that's long behind us. And I don't think that within the construct of where they are and what I think is likely to happen, there's some terrible outcome here.
All right. Okay. Field Yates, excellent stuff. You can check out his latest ESPN. You can follow him on Twitter at Field Yates. And if you're on the South Shore in the vicinity of Vitamin C Brewing in Weymouth, the draft party tonight, it's a Pats pre-draft chat and beer. Fitzy's going to be there along with Doug Kide and Andrew Callahan of the Boston Herald. All proceeds for the event go to Doug Kide's Leukemia and Lymphoma Society fundraiser in memory of his daughter, Haley. And one of the things you can bid on is 30 minutes of fantasy football advice from Field Yates, which I think is pretty ideal and a pretty good package. So it's a great cause if you're on the South Shore tonight. Field, we appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
All right, guys. Talk to you soon.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Some people follow the rules, I break them. I'm Soraya, and on Rule Breakers, we talk to the rebels who do things their way. Listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Chime, intentional homage to Gino, dancing his way around the Boston Garden in the 70s to celebrate the Boston Celtics. Is that why you chose that this morning?
Exactly, Greg. Nailed it.
Excellent. How about those Orlando fans chanting, "We want Boston"?
Mm. Be careful what you ask for.
They want the smoke.
Be careful. They're going to get it.
Well, they'll get the Celtics on Sunday.
To be fair, that's been a big story. Like, do you want them to go, "We don't want Boston"? Like, what do you want them to say? We want to lose.
Yeah. Well, you can talk about the round one matchup for the Celtics all day long here on Boston Sports Original WEEI. Tomorrow on this show, Rob Ninkovich on the draft. And we'll get his draft thoughts tomorrow morning. And then Monday, our annual marathon show right there at the finish line on Boylston Street at the Capitol Grill. And that is brought to you by Sitco. And we'll be joined by Will Middlebrooks at 8 o'clock on Marathon Monday at the Capitol Grill. So, and what a day. It's going to be in the 60s, Curtis, for Marathon Monday.
Perfect day for you to chug nice drinks and have some apps at the Capitol Grill.
Well, we got the show, and then we had the party afterwards. And we got a bunch, if you're coming to the party to benefit the foundation, bunch of special guests I've been hearing from. Curtis, of interest to you is Jason Veritek and D'Lo.
Derek Lowe?
Yes.
Both. Oh, my God. That is my hero. I want to meet Derek Lowe.
Yeah, both coming over after the game. I think David Andrews will be moseying his way around, so it should be a good event on Monday.
One of my favorite spicy margaritas of all time is when I'm handed one at the end of that broadcast.
Really?
I think Capitol Grill, they put them in like these dark mugs with a perfect salted rim. Absolutely delicious. Yeah. And the, what do you dip the fruit in? That's like a little bit of like sweet.
Creme fraiche.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
That's what you call it, right, Wiggy?
Yeah, that's what all your boys call a creme fraiche.
Oh, can we get Derek Lowe on the show? That is like my idol. Oh, I love D'Lo.
I'll get him on Monday. You want to get him on Monday?
The balls on that guy in Game 7 on 2 days rest. Everybody talks about Dave Roberts and David Ortiz and Damon's Grand Slam, but Derek Lowe in that 04 postseason was the ball.
Sounds like you have a crush on him.
Have you ever met him in person?
I have not.
He is big.
I've seen him in person.
Yeah,
never met him.
He's big. He's a legit 6'3", 6'4".
I would give him a big kiss.
See if I can make that happen for you, Curtis.
And Courtney, didn't Greg say to us, if you haven't been offered tickets to the marathon party, to just send Greg a note?
Yeah. I think that he said email, DM, text, call.
That is the text messages are fast and furious on that baby.
Hill dog.
Hardest ticket in town.
Speaking of text messages, one for you, Shime, following up on the discussion that we had as a part of your lead. I'll read it verbatim.
Ooh.
A running back might last 5 years in the league if lucky. Why waste the number 4 pick on a running back?
I don't think they only last 5 years. I mean, Saquon Barkley's on his second contract. That means he's lasted 5 years, and he's going real strong.
Derrick Henry
is into his 30s. I mean, look, some guys are just built different, and I just think Ashton Jeanthe is one of those guys. The guy led the nation in yards after contact. He not only did he have 2,600 yards rushing, after contact last year in college football, he had 1,900 yards rushing. This guy is just awesome. I don't know what it is about
him. Ohio State. Was that Ohio State? Who do they play in the playoff?
They played
Oregon, right? And he ran for over 100 yards.
Yeah, he was not non-factor in that game. Entire non-factor.
Well, the first Oregon game, he almost rushed for 200.
I think in a lot of cases, experience informs the decisions that you make as you go through life.
Right.
And certainly Mike Vrabel had success with an extraordinary running back.
Right.
So maybe that's why there's smoke. There's fire around that smoke that they're suddenly interested in taking him at number 4.
And you could get away with a guy like him, especially like when you look at the running backs that are successful other than McCaffrey, you can get away with those having a good running back when you have a quarterback that you can sprinkle in some runs. So, like, if you look at Saquon debacle, you bring up Jalen Hurts. So you have to defend for the quarterback as well. Same with Derrick Henry and Lamar Jackson. So if you can say, hey, we're going to utilize Drake May's leg, so not only are you going to have to defend Drake May in the running game, but you're also going to have to defend Ashton Jeanty. That's going to make things easier for Jeanty because they're not just going to be able to key on him.
Okay. I just would ask, what team, like first-round running backs that helped lead a team to a Super Bowl?
To a Super Bowl?
I just think about that position. It's a luxury. Like, I think it'd be great. I'm sure Jeanty will be
fine. Running backs. Yeah, but when you look at the talent level of the rest of the players in the draft, I would rather just get the best player available than, like, take a random swing on a guy.
Well,
like,
I would give you the first. You said first round running backs that led their team to a Super Bowl.
Sony Michel,
Saquon Barkley.
Saquon Barkley. Yeah. Yeah.
Right, but he was not. That's not the team he was drafted by. Is what I'm talking about. Like on the team that.
Oh, you're
been drafted,
staying on the team they've been drafted by.
Because you're, you know, the purpose is to draft them and turn them into a champion.
Yeah.
And you just, you know, you look at a guy like Sony Michel, but the Patriots would have won without Sony Michel. I mean, any other running back could have done that.
It's just if you have questions on Will Campbell, like if you trade for Colton Miller, you have your left tackle, so you're not drafting a guard at four. And then if you have questions on Tet McMillan or you have questions on Jalen Walker, you just take the best player on the board, and it's Ashton Jeanty.
Right. I'm just looking at guys like Najee Harris, Travis Etienne, like I just... I don't see it. I don't see the guy that's going to be.
Yeah, but he's
Robinson.
So much better than those two guys.
Is he so much better than Bijan Robinson?
I think he's better than Bijan Robinson, yes.
He's pretty good, Bijan Robinson.
I mean,
Bijan's
so
good.
Much better? I don't think so. Why do
I
go,
wouldn't say
why
like
go
so
Boise?
Much better, but like I think he is much better, yes.
Okay. And Bijan Robinson's good, though. So if you had a guy like Bijan Robinson who plays for the Atlanta Falcons, and he went in the top 10, I believe.
He went 7.
I think when you look at this, to kind of like, all right, if Shime wants to go with trading for the left tackle, now if you're sitting there at number 4 and we're saying Travis Hunter and Abdul Carter are gone.
Are both gone, yep.
I guess I could live with that. I mean, me personally, I could live with that. I like Tyler Warren. I mean, I just want to get...
Well, yeah, you have been all over them drafting a tight end.
I would drop down a little bit to get Tyler Warren, pick up an extra draft pick.
But I don't know. It just seems like the last 24 hours, that's what you're hearing.
Right, but you're going to have to get a skill player, right? So let's say they go the Shime route and they trade for that offensive lineman. Yeah. At number 4, you're either going to go wide receiver, you're going to go running back, or you're going to have to go offensive skill player. Yep. And so out of the offensive skill players, maybe Shime's right. Ashton Jeanty might be the best available one.
But even if we were to redraft the 2018 draft, you would have said the Giants would have been far better off taking Josh Allen over Saquon Barkley, even though Saquon Barkley's had a probably statistical better NFL career.
Yeah, but you don't need the quarterback. We're talking about you're there at number 4. You got your tackle. What do you take? If you're there at number 4 and you, Greg, you brought this up and I hadn't heard it, that they're interested in Jeanty, what would you take? Do you take Jeanty? Do you take Tetaroa McMillan? Do you take my guy Tyler Warren? So I think you would take, and if you are looking at skill plays, he's probably the best available skill player left.
This is David. Hello, David.
Hi, good morning, guys. Great show, as always. Thank you. Yeah. So I think we're overlooking the power of a running back. Marcus Allen on his second year.
Right.
Not the first, second year. Okay, went to the Super Bowl. So don't dismiss a good running back. Maybe not the first year.
Yeah.
I mean,
was that before or after he smashed OJ's wife?
Good question.
Okay, all right.
I mean, Walter Payton.
I think overall Curtis's point is generally right. It's just with this draft, and you have to take every draft on a case by case basis. Like, there's just I don't think there's a better player to take. I would be fine with trading down if you would rather do that. I'm okay with that. But if you're sitting at 4, I think you just take the best player available if you've already traded for your left tackle.
And the running backs are starting to come back when you start to look at value of having a really good. So you're starting to see a lot of teams. If one guy is like legit, like we brought up Bijan Robinson, they're starting to utilize their top 10 picks on running backs.
All right, we got to squeeze in the last couple leads quick here. So, Wiggy.
All right, so mine will be super quick. So I would let everybody know tomorrow you must get out, go to the movie theaters, and support Sinners. That is the new movie with Michael B. Jordan, and it's directed by Ryan Coogler. and it looks absolutely amazing. It's got 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. And
what is the genre of the film?
The genre of this film is horror, action, drama. Okay. It's a movie that Michael B. Jordan plays twin brothers from the 1930s that kind of have this troubled past. They move back to their southern hometown, and the evil of, like, it's like vampires in it, and it looks like really good. It's almost like a little bit of a spinoff, if I have to say, not a spinoff, but if you remember the movie From Dusk Till Dawn with George Clooney.
Okay.
So it looks really, really good. It comes out tomorrow.
Will you go see it in a theater?
I will go see this in the theater because, unfortunately for me, there's a theater right downstairs from where I live, and a lot of people generally don't go.
What will be your snack of choice? If you could only have one.
I'm probably a Twizzlers guy.
You are?
Yes.
You don't get popcorn?
I mean, if I had to choose.
No, Butterfingers.
What?
Butterfingers.
Yeah, not a bad take. Caught in your teeth?
Butterfingers are the very best movie snack by far.
No, you only get popcorn.
I'm a Twizzler guy.
Twizzlers are great because they keep your fingers clean. You don't have to worry about the mess.
What?
Like chocolate can get melty. Popcorn has butter and salt and stuff
delicious.
On it.
Whereas popcorn Twizzlers, and crunch a bunch. Bunch
of
crunch.
Yeah, but popcorn... At the theater I go to, they put the butter on it.
Delicious.
But sometimes they might over-butter it, too salty.
There's no such thing.
All right, Wiggy, thank you.
Yeah,
thank
so make sure you go. And Ryan Coogler directed Black Panther. He directed Creed.
Three Games to Glory.
No, he's one of the young, up-and-coming top directors out there.
Okay, Wiggy, thank you.
You got it.
In a million quick, years, would you have guessed Twizzlers as his selection there?
No, I love Twizzlers.
Never. Wow.
Only the red ones.
Dude, I was going to ask, do you like the licorice ones? The
hell
black,
no.
The black licorice ones?
Hell
they're
no.
not good at all.
No, you couldn't pay me.
What about the pull and peel ones, the cherry ones?
Ew.
No, I remember Shelly. I like the standard strawberry.
People who like black licorice are most likely cereal killers.
Definitely.
Yeah. Agreed.
Definitely.
And there are some people who actually prefer it.
Mm-mm.
Like, ask for it. Out of the package.
My mother was like that. That she used to drink. What was the black liquor? Was it Kahlua?
No.
Sambuca?
Sambuca. Oh, God.
Yeah, she likes Sambuca?
Yeah. Disgusting.
That's a Greek liqueur, I think.
Yeah,
Sambuca.
Anyway.
Real quick, because we're up against it. I think there's a wager on this show hanging on the line, so I wanted to bring this up. It seems like, based on a couple reports over the last 24 hours, that the Steelers are moving off of Aaron Rodgers.
Oof.
And so when you read into it, it appears like Aaron Rodgers holding out for big dollars. Steelers getting frustrated with that. Mm-hmm. And with the draft a week away, are basically like, we got to move on here.
Mm-hmm.
And so... Does that mean in your mind that there is no landing spot for Aaron Rodgers and his career is donezo?
No.
No?
I think that he might be holding out for more money, and then when the Steelers don't take a quarterback at 21,
they'll come back and pay him what he wants.
They'll circle back and
so this smoke has no fire.
Nah, I don't think so.
They're just trying to get him to sign now before the draft.
And he's like, "Well, you know what? If I want to maximize my financial earning, why not put them in a position to say, we're sitting at 21. There's a chance that both Jackson Dart and Shedeur Sanders will be gone before then. Why not put the pressure on them to come to me and say, all right, we need a veteran quarterback because we have a playoff team?
Steelers are his last hope, though. That's what I think.
I think so.
Yeah.
I mean, there doesn't seem to be anywhere else.
Yeah. Unless somebody comes out of the woodwork.
All right. Those are our leads. We are going to get to They Said It next right now, Courtney, and what is trending this hour.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
The Bruins season is over, and while we didn't get a press conference yesterday, we did hear from Charlie Jacobs via the Bees on X. In part, he wrote, "The 2024-25 season was undoubtedly one of the most challenging of my tenure with the Boston Bruins. Today, I share your disappointment as the team clears out their locker stalls ahead of a long offseason. It's clear that we have a lot of work to do, and that work is already underway. There is only one way forward from here. Expectations and accountability are higher than ever." Interesting to see what that means.
Yes. All right. Well, they're back to work.
Yes.
Getting ready for the draft.
Yes. The Red Sox wrap up a stretch of 15 games in 15 days, taking the final game of the series with Tampa Bay 1-0. thanks to a David Hamilton homer in the third. Sean Newcomb went 4 2/3, giving up 0 runs on 4 hits while striking out 4. So the Sox take that series. The guys are off tonight before their home series with the White Sox starts tomorrow. That's what's trending. Here's Curtis with your weather.
41 degrees and sunny, afternoon high, 57 and sunny.
Joining us on the phone lines now, Tom Curran, NBC Sports Boston. Tom Curran on WEEI Afternoons is brought to you by Drains by James, Eastern Mass's leader in residential and commercial drain cleaning and pipelining at drainsbyjames.com. At Drains by James, they give a poop about your pipes. Tom Curran, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are my guys?
Tremendous. Good,
so great.
Yay.
Thank you.
Yay.
Okay, so I need to start with something that feels like old news, but is also new news. Tony Pauline, I believe that's how you pronounce it, out of Cleveland.
Yeah.
Had a little allusion to the Patriots being interested in or in on Myles Garrett and Max Crosby earlier this offseason. What do you make of that? Did you hear rumblings of that? Is it true? Break it down for me.
Well, Tony's a pretty trustworthy guy. He's been covering the NFL for a long time.
Yeah.
And he often gets things that other folks don't have, and because he doesn't have the biggest platform, you don't often hear about it. But if Tony reported it, and that's kind of the first I had heard of it right now, unfortunately, I'm sorry. Just a heads up before these things, let me know, and I can double check. But I would say it was probably tire kicking.
Yeah.
But we've heard alluded to a number of different times the notion that the Patriots are willing to do something big and are anxious to do something big. And I certainly don't think that Stephon Diggs qualifies as bigness in the extreme. So I do think they're still in the market to try and make something happen, which I think is tremendous. They have a need for aggressiveness, but I don't think that the aggressiveness, and I talked about this on Quick Slants the other day, should be totally directed at 2025. I did a little look back at the drafts from the last 5 years, back to 2020, they've got 11 of the 48 drafted players who are useful. None of them are Pro Bowlers, excuse me, except for Gonzalez. And I guess Mac on a technicality. I mean, not Mac. Well, Mac.
Yeah, Mac and Drake. 40,
Mac and Drake, Meg. But 11 of 48 are still here and can be referred to as useful. That's insanely bad. Oof. And they have to be aggressive in the draft to make sure that they're getting every single guy they get is useful, just like they did in 1995, Ted Johnson.
Yes, sir.
Oh, he's sucking
up. Yes, sir.
Up.
Thank you for that. bringing that up, Tom. I'm curious because you and I have kind of thought similarly throughout this, you know, kind of draft process when it comes to that fourth overall pick. And I just hear, you know, them kind of kicking the tires on those guys in the offseason, those edge rushers. That, you know, maybe, just maybe, that fourth overall pick, it doesn't feel like it's a foregone conclusion that if Will Campbell is there for him, that they're going to take him. They might go a different direction, maybe like a Jaylon Walker, you know, guy that they're talking about is maybe a guy that would fit a Vrabel scheme. Do you think, I just feel like this for this regime, this is a big, obviously, draft. Do you think this regime, this front office, has the chutzpah, the guts, the guile to maybe make a pick at four that is unpopular? Because I think the popular, safe pick is Will Campbell. Do you think this organization has the guts to maybe have a different opinion on a player that you and I talk about that maybe they would go that direction as opposed to the safe pick?
I think that they could be tempted to buck conventional wisdom. Given Vrabel's comments the other day about left tackle and primarily about him saying the word premier position. Now, Jaylon Walker is playing a premier position, but he's kind of a hybrid. He's an edge slash linebacker in a way that, you know, your normal edge guys are not. A lot of them are referred to as linebackers. They're not. They just pass rush. This guy does play at the second level and has, but he's dynamic. He's the son of a coach. Every time you hear him talk, he's just impressive as hell. I think that's the great thing about the Patriots' opportunity there for. The concerns about, am I going to get guys who are good for the program, whether it's Will Campbell or Jaylon Walker or Mason Graham or Tyler Warren or Membu, all of them seem to be very, very, very credible, hardworking, no flies on them kind of guys. But when it comes to bucking conventional wisdom, I think that they should. I think that they should take the guy who's going to walk in, and make an impact at that position, and you can plug him there for 5 to 7 years. That's why I continue to come back to Tyler Warren, and that's unconventional, but it's also narrow-minded if you think that it's not useful to have a guy who can catch 85 passes for 1,000 yards every friggin' year.
And that's why I keep coming back to, based on your logic there, Tom, Ashton Jeanty, because nobody is better at their position in my estimation. But then again, I'd probably get fired for drafting a running back fourth overall with the host of needs this team has, but we'll find out in a week. Now, that being said,
let me say this.
Please.
Let me say this on Jeanty.
Please.
They are so fungible in terms of you can Antonio Gibson's better than the back that the Patriots have at the top of their food chain. He's a better player. And the year before, Ezekiel Elliott was a better player than Ramondre Stevenson, too. I mean, you can get guys to make you 4 and 5 yards. Is Ashton Jeanty going to be Christian McCaffrey? Is he going to be Saquon Barkley? If he is, okay, fine. If not, then don't do it.
Right. Now, that said, one pathway to possibly being able to make a dangerous but possibly dynamic trade like that or a pick like that would be maybe calling the Raiders and seeing if they have any interest in dealing disgruntled left tackle Colton Miller, who's highly regarded around the league, good, a pro football focused darling. Have you heard anything about that? Did that just pop up on your radar like it did recently for the rest of us that, like, they're not negotiating and he might be available?
Yeah, just the rumblings around the league that are starting to, what do they call that, chatter?
Yeah.
In the government?
The hubbub.
A lot of chatter. Yeah. A lot of chatter.
Scuttlebutt.
And I think there's idle time. The hay's in the barn with most of these picks. So now it turns to chatter about who could be had, who might be had. And when I've talked to GMs in the past and this year, a lot of it is they're asking us as reporters what we know and feel and sense around our teams. And that is something that goes on. So it's really a trade of information that goes on. And oftentimes it's a lot of smoke. And I think that, you know, could it come together? 1,000,000%. Would I think the Patriots' first inclination, Fitzy, would be to trade down? Unbelievably, that would be the first thing that I would try to do. Do we have anything? Does anybody want to come up here and give us more so that we can go ahead and get all positions kind of filled and still move down and get a very good player in the top 10? I think that would be their first inclination. But as Mike Florio pointed out earlier today, this is the latest point at which there have been zero trades and every team still owns all 32 teams still own their first round pick.
Tom Curran, NBC Sports Boston here on WEEI Afternoons. And I wanted to reference that the other day, I believe the press conference kicked off with Karen asking about phone calls, trade phone calls. And Mike Vrabel said, well, it's a little early for that. And we wondered, is it a little early or is no one really that interested and those calls aren't going to come? Are you just sort of delaying the inevitable? If they want to trade, do you think there will be any opportunities or are they going to have to be stuck there and pick there?
I think they're going to get lowballed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I really do. And, you know, say, for instance, Abdul Carter falls to 4.
Ooh.
Then then you're either going to run to the podium or say, does anybody want to give me this year's first on the top 10 and next year's first, too?
Ooh.
Whatever bad team is out there willing to do something like that. But I don't think you're going to get that if Carter and Hunter are gone. And I don't think that would be their first inclination. I just think that it's overwhelming how much better those guys are than everyone else.
Hey, Tom, I'm just curious. This is a fun little question. If you know, there's a lot of people that when Belichick took the job at UNC, said, well, he's going to be irrelevant, not going to be a story. And, I mean, you know, if you know Bill Belichick, like you and I know and others, the stories weren't going to go away. There's going to be storylines that are going to follow him down there. Have you been following what's going on down there? And do you have any thoughts at all about how it's been going for him down at UNC?
I'm glad you asked that. I just finished reading a story on The Athletic by Stuart Mandel, who I'm sure you guys have heard of in the past, longtime college football writer. And the story was basically, I've not changed my mind about how things are going to go for Bill Belichick in North Carolina. 5 reasons that he hasn't changed his mind and observations so far. He didn't think it would end well for Bill down there. The 5 observations he's made is Bill is intent on running it. The only outward signs he's giving, hasn't spoken to reporters since the initial day, didn't really open up spring practice. When he did open up a practice, guys are running around with no numbers on. There was no access to Bill. And all they talk about is, you know, we're getting guys ready for the pros. When they bill somebody as having spoken to the team, it's Rob Ninkovich, you know, Super Bowl champion, or David Andrews, Super Bowl champion. So it's very pro-oriented. Lombardi said we're going to try and be the 33rd NFL team. So to me, he's running it that way. When you look at the recruits, they've done pretty well so far. They're 11th or 12th, according to Mandel.
In the ACC?
In terms of attracting, nationally, in terms of attracting recruits. But they've got way more guys under agreement, and a lot of teams are still filling out their rosters, so that might go down. But I just from rumblings I heard, this is not recent, this is a month or two ago, they're not loving the Bill Belichick experience if you're an everyday employee down there, which is probably what a lot of the people here in 2000 felt when they came aboard, when Bill came aboard and said, I don't know if I like this.
Mm-hmm. Stop smiling, Ted.
It's uncomfortable.
Jeepers creepers. Wow. I mean, Tom, I read this morning the spring portal has opened up 10,127 players. That sounds like a fun talent pool.
Couple after. Left UNC, actually.
My God.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the quarterback and their best pass rushers. And I'm out.
Anyway, last question real quick. So one of our producers here hipped us to a little cold open you did the other night on NBC Sports Boston, a little walk and talk, talking about players you think that would be here in a couple of years, and you only said four maybe at tops like that you could see, like Drake May, Gonzo, Milton Williams, and Keon White. Are those your four pillars or building blocks or of this Patriots team right now, and the rest of it thus is kind of like disposable?
I don't think disposable in the immediate, but when you project out, what's the core of the Patriots football team right now? Mm-hmm. Who's going to be here when Drake May gets good? Morgan Moses won't be here. Mike Onwenu, that would be a coin flip. Three more years. Kyle Duggar, he's an older player. Would he get another contract coming up after that? Peppers will be gone. Carlton Davis will be gone. We'll see what happens with Robert Spillane. Jalen Polk and Javon Baker, they're 50-50 to make it through to 2026. So yeah. Kendrick Bourne will be gone. Stevenson will probably be gone. Henry and Hooper will be gone. So Diggs will be gone. So to me, the point is, just like I was referencing Ted, and while it is a nice back rub for him, those drafts were amazing. The 1993 draft, I think you got Troy Brown, Andrew Bledsoe, and other guys. 1994 was Willie. 1995 was Ted, Curtis Martin, and Ty Law, correct?
Yep.
96 was Terry Glenn and probably other useful guys.
A lawyer and Teddy, yep.
Yes, they were useful.
Very useful.
Then Parcells left, and you got Cedric Shaw.
Right.
So it's and the same thing happened in 2000 through 2005. You're getting Vince Wilfork and Ty Warren and Richard Seymour and Matt Light. You're not just getting two guys like they got last year. You're not just getting DeMario Douglas level, you know, nice, average, maybe a player who's in the top 15 among slot receivers, but not, no one's going crazy to say I need DeMario Douglas on my team. They have to get good players over and over again in this draft.
So in 7 days, in a little over 4 hours, what's going to happen? What's your prediction?
They're going to try like hell to trade down, and then they're going to make my dreams come true with Tyler Warren.
You are so full of it. Mm-hmm. You're full of it.
I love it. Hope he's right.
I actually predicted you would say that before we did this segment. I said he's going to stick with his pick, and he's smart to do that because if it happens, you can take the all-time great victory lap.
Absolutely, because no one's saying
easy pickings.
Yeah.
All right, Tom. Thanks, Tom. We'll talk to you next week. Appreciate it.
All right, guys. Take care.
Thank you, Tom.
That was Tom Karn, NBC Sports Boston. We're running a little late here. When we come back, we'll react to a couple things that he said there about the Patriots draft and this offseason that is underway. Hate it or love it every day here on Jones and Keefe. We have the final results on yesterday's player, Will Campbell, at pick 4. Do you hate it or love it? 56% of you hate it.
Wow.
Not a fan of Will Campbell at pick number 4. I'm sorry, one more time. What was that?
Hated it.
There you go. They are not fans of it. Perfect. They
would not want Will Campbell. That is pretty surprising because there's a big, or so I thought, community of linemen.
I told you to linemen. I think we figured it out.
Small and loud.
They are the offensive line, the tackle hardos.
Yeah.
They are noisy.
Yeah.
But there's just not as many as you would expect out there.
Not many of them.
Small and loud is exactly it. They're compensating for something. All those tackle hardos out there. But again,
the Carter people, big and quiet. Because we don't hear a lot of Abdul Carter talk, and then you put it on a poll question, and like 90-something% loved it.
Okay, so 56% hate the Will Campbell.
Interesting.
Pick. It's a good exercise here. That trails 92% who love the Abdul Carter pick, 84% love the Travis Hunter pick. On the board right now at Jones and Keefe, you can vote on Twitter and Instagram. Ashton Gentry at pick number 4. Would you hate or love selecting Ashton Gentry, running back out of Boise State?
I would love it. I would. Now, I don't think most times you would draft a running back this high, but this isn't most times. Gentry, and we just talked to Field Yates about it last hour, the gap between Ashton Gentry and the next running back is more significant than any of the other top players we're talking about and the next guy at their position. I think it'd be dynamic to add to this backfield, whether it's with Ramondre Stevenson or if you end up flipping Ramondre Stevenson in a trade somewhere else. This guy could be a Pro Bowler in short order. He's an absolute beast. You're giving Drake May a weapon. Yeah, it doesn't solve your left tackle situation, but it does give him a lot of help. And we know some of the Mike Vrabel's best teams had great running games in Tennessee. So I would love the Ashton Gentry pick.
I love it.
And I know you would, too. You've been talking about Gentry for a while.
I am a fan.
I love it.
I would also love it. And I love it even more. Do you see his Players Tribune entry?
No, but I saw him work out with his shirt off, so I'm sold.
I love it.
I do love
it. No, he had a great line. I didn't read the whole Players Tribune thing, but he did have one awesome line.
First of all, Players Tribune's still a thing?
Apparently.
Really didn't realize that. The most notorious Players Tribune, I think you were on the air when this happened.
I had to read it to breaking news, and it was like, it wasn't like a simple tweet. It was like buried in the second paragraph. It was Kevin Durant choosing the Warriors.
I remember that.
And I was
well.
Like, where are you going?
I remember you being on that day. I remember it was Players Tribune.
Uh-huh.
I remember all that. So he concludes the Players Tribune. He says, I believe I was born to do this.
Nice.
I truly believe what makes me different isn't about the position I line up at.
No.
It's about the mindset I bring. He said, those 11 dudes on defense, they're on a football field playing football. Me, my mind, I'm still in the backyard with my friends playing no one can touch me. I've taken the long way. I'm done with that way. If you pick me, it's simple. I'm coming to your franchise to do what Saquon and the Eagles just did.
Oh, man.
I'm coming to win big soon. He says, it's tackle football, all caps. You know what I'm saying?
I do.
I draft the guy they can't tackle.
Ah, that's a great line.
Hell yeah.
That is an amazing line.
Thank you for your time, Ashton Gentry. I would love this pick. Assuming Carter and Hunter aren't there, this is the best player in the draft. This is a position of need. It would help Drake May on offense. It's not their biggest position of need, but it would help. And I know he's going to be a running back. I know he's going to be a high-level run. I think he's going to be a high-level running back. I guess you could have said the same thing about Trent Richardson and guys like this.
Mm, sure.
But
Saquon.
If he's Ezekiel Elliott, if he's Saquon Barkley, that's a worthwhile pick. And as you said, Keith, most years is drafting a running back in the top four bad business? Probably.
Yeah, most years.
Probably not ideal. This is not most years. The alternative is you draft Will Campbell, who might be a guard, at 4. You draft Armon Membu, who is a right tackle, at 4. You draft Tet McMillan, you reach for him at 4.
Yeah.
Undersized Mason Graham at 4. Jalen Walker doesn't have a position at 4. The point is, there's no perfect player here.
Unless you know what you're getting, I think.
Unless Carter or Hunter drop into your lap, there's no perfect player. This guy has the biggest chance to hit and be a Pro Bowl caliber player and help you. We got a text earlier today. What about his game against Penn State? What about it? He had 100-plus yards and 3 catches and 20-whatever receiving yards.
When 11 guys were in the box.
Yeah. I was going to say, all they did was key on him, and he still had a pretty good game.
Our guy Field Yates had an awesome tweet earlier today. On
I'm going to be on Jones and Keefe?
On Ashton Gentry. It was nothing about Jones and Keefe on the Field Yates timeline. He said, the most rushing yards in FBS in 2024. Ashton Gentry, 2601. I mean, he made a run at Barry Sanders records in college football last year.
Yeah.
Number 2 in college football last year with 1,733 yards, Ashton Gentry after contact. So if you just took his yards after contact,
right,
he would have led more than Cam Scataboo,
more than Amarian Hampton, more than Bryson Daly, whoever that
which
is.
Which is good, because with the Patriots on the line, there's going to be a lot of contact.
There's going to be a lot of contact. Right,
plenty of contact. But this is where that Colt Miller story comes into play. If you trade for Colt Miller and then draft Ashton Jeanty, like, what a coup. You bring both those guys, so it's been real quiet, right? So Drake May is probably sitting there thinking, okay, good, another defensive player, another defensive player, another defensive player. And then in the last couple of weeks, you say, no, Steph Diggs, Colt Miller, Ashton Jeanty, and that's not even including the high second round pick, which could move up into the first round. That's starting to become the dream scenario, really.
I mean, look, that would be great. You get your tackle via trade, you get Jeanty, and now you're cooking. So again, you can vote at Jones and Keefe, Twitter and Instagram, at Pick4. How would you feel about the Patriots selecting Ashton Jeanty? Keefe would love it. I would love it. Early returns, a lot of you would not be fans of it.
No, they would not.
But those are just early returns. We're not closing precincts. We're not calling anything here early.
There's a lot of time left.
It's not a 15-minute poll. Five-minute poll?
Five
what was it?
Poll. I'm sorry. Five-minute poll.
It's not a five-minute poll. It's a 24-hour poll. Yeah. So we'll do the research there. You could vote, and we'll get you the results tomorrow at 11:45 when we give you our next prospect on the clock, Mason Graham, D-tackle out of Michigan.
Tomorrow on this show, Mike Bilbrey, as the Bruins end the season with a loss, and not a loss in regulation, which would have helped them when it comes to the draft lottery, but in overtime. So,
we got to blow through the stop sign of the conversation that we had on break. Now, listen, I love
you bullying Courtney?
No, not bullying.
Yes.
I love the Coxes and Courtney. You know, she's like a little sister that I never had.
Pause.
But to learn what they do on Easter, they are the biggest, douchiest family around.
What is happening with
it
you?
Is so, you?
So listen, Curtis, I have suffered through 5 minutes of this.
Okay, so here's why I say this. She's talking about Browns. Yep. If you've never been to Browns, which is in Seabrook. Seabrook, New Hampshire. Yep.
That is something you saw on Pornhub, I think.
No. It's a seafood restaurant, but it's like they have these picnic tables in there. You go in and eat.
Yeah.
So Courtney and her family go there on Easter.
Right.
They bring picnic tablecloths.
Yep.
Okay.
They don't have
them, obviously, at Brown.
They don't have them. They take a bunch of tables. There's no, like, reserve seating, so you can't be like, oh, we're renting this out. They just get there and they get three tables. They put they bring their own food in.
No.
What?
No.
Wait a minute.
Okay.
You bring your own food?
We bring our own cheese board, and then we'll bring dessert. But we get all of our rest of the food there.
You bring your own charcuterie?
Yes.
Right.
Yes, exactly.
I don't think you're supposed to bring your own food to a sit-down restaurant.
Yes, you can
restaurant.
Bring cheese and crackers and dessert.
No, yes, you can. So do you bring your own wine and beer and stuff?
Yes, it's BYOB. That's the best part about the place.
But don't they sell stuff?
No, they don't.
Okay.
So you bring your own.
It's not BYOC. It's not bring your own cheese, though, I don't think.
Well, they don't have cheese, it technically is.
So hold on. This is just, they bring their own stuff. And then if you've ever been to Browns or Markey's, you talked about across the street, those places are always packed. But they then sit in there for 3 hours and have a picnic. Well, people are waiting to eat.
No, the thing is if you've never been to Browns, you go there, you put your order in, and then you have to wait for them to call your number to then go get your order. So while we are waiting, we have a cheese board, some wine, some beer. I believe Santo's mom's bringing a jug of martini. Hmm. So, like, we enjoy
You make a day out of it.
It's
in
Easter.
A restaurant, but it's a restaurant that people are waiting outside.
They should have got there early.
That's why I lost.
It's Easter.
So can I do that in Applebee's?
Yes.
Bring in a.
Well, no, that's much different.
I don't.
No, it isn't.
Wow. Who appointed you to be the spokesperson for Browns and the way they run their business?
So you think it's cool?
I don't think calling the entire
family. Let me ask
you
this, Greg. You're a restaurant person.
Yes.
You think it's cool for somebody to go to a restaurant, bring their own food, and sit there for 3 hours like they're having a picnic?
I mean,
if it's a place like Browns, yes.
It's a different kind of a setup.
No, it's not. If you've been to Browns, it's all.
You're acting like.
The only difference is they have like picnic tables and the benches.
And you're not waited on. So yeah,
yeah, but it's like a lot of places are like that. It's no different than the clam shack.
Oh my God, you are so wrong on
no,
this.
No, this is such and, a hot
let me,
old
be,
move.
Let me be clear. We are Douche not the move. Only family that has the tablecloths and the cheese boards. You look around the place and you could tell all the different families because of their setup.
Then that's a bunch of massive a-holes who go there and spend 3 and 4 hours.
Would you please?
What is, Curtis, you don't seem a problem with
so
that?
I would be bothered by people occupying a table if I was trying to get seated.
Right.
But I have never been to this location, so I don't know.
Curtis, I understand what you're saying, but if you went there, you would not have
Curtis,
an issue with it.
It's like an outdoor. You go, they have an outdoor place where everybody sits, and they announce the number 47, and you go to the window and pick
it up. Yeah, I'm kind of with Wiggy on that. Like, there's a lobster pool, I think, in Rockport, which is... Right behind the place, there's a bunch of tables.
Mm-hmm.
You put your order in, you pay, you go down, you get your number, and you might bring like a tablecloth, but
it's like wait, Sullivan's.
It is. If you're over an hour and a half, I feel like that is a no-no.
Well, we have a big group, so it takes a while to get the food, and then everybody eats.
It takes 15 minutes to get the food.
Yeah. Right.
15 minutes to get whether you're getting your shrimps or whether you get clam bellies, French fries, or you're getting a fish and...
Yeah, it is 15 minutes at those spots.
Yeah,
they churn it.
They turn it around so quickly.
We have
so
like a group of 15.
And even if you pick up to get the lobsters, because they have the lobsters you could pick up, takes 10 minutes.
Right.
You go, you put your order, and you sit down. It's like any other...
I thoroughly enjoy it.
Yeah, exactly, because we see how the Coxes do. I'm going to have a talking to the Coxes when I see them.
Really?
Because I've gone to Browns before.
Are you
not on Easter?
But in the summertime, like you're saying, it's the same thing.
I'm telling you, I've never had somebody come up to our table and say, "We've been waiting here for a long time. Can you guys move it along?"
Well, they're probably being polite.
Yeah,
they're probably thinking that. Like, I mean, you're there for 4 hours or whatever it is.
Yeah,
that's a
it's
long
Easter
time to eat.
And then Wiggy had the audacity during the break to say, "Who celebrates Easter without kids?"
Well, yeah, like little
Easter's
kids.
Not really like a holiday that's just about kids. It's about
like finding the
it's
Easter
a religious
eggs.
Holiday.
Yeah, but I get it. It's for like but it's for the little kids to go find the eggs. Mm. As adults, like we go, we eat dinner, and that's
celebrate
it.
Jesus. Right. Sue me.
For 5 hours?
Yeah. He did a lot for us.
Sure did. Gave his life.
Yes, he
Jesus.
Did.
By the way, we would be remiss to not mention a birthday today.
Oh.
The Patriots, this will go well, just tweeted, "Happy birthday, Coach Belichick."
Wow.
Oh.
So we'll be interesting to see how people reply to the Patriots, given their
happy birthday, King.
So
hey,
73 years
old. Curtis, we didn't get an update from you on the news that broke yesterday with some of the emails that are available based on the fact that UNC has to public records have to reveal all emails.
Yes.
Right. Freedom of Information Act is in full effect. By the way, we now know the culprit for me having to take down the Belichick drinking coffee photo before the interview a couple years ago. That would have been Jordan Hudson, without a doubt.
Yeah. Remember he was angry that we took a picture of him?
Which, it's Stacey and I were talking, and I love Stacey. I mean, I said, of course, no problem. It just struck me as odd that we're on camera.
Yeah.
Like, what would be the issue?
And you think it was Jordan.
A 1,000%. Yeah. She has requested people monitor the Facebook page of the UNC Tar Heels who comment about his relationship with her, referring to her as a predator.
Yeah.
And she says, how does this make sense? Why are we allowing these comments to keep, you know, whatever?
Well, I think he commented that.
Well,
I think Bill commented and said
in an email.
Yeah, in
which
an email.
I am positive she wrote.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
There's no way that Bill Belichick is writing an email about that.
I don't think Bill Belichick wants to be called a predator.
I don't think he's been called far worse and never made an issue of it.
But she was trying to orchestrate the way the hiring of Steve Belichick was described, so as to avoid
that he was
a nepotism.
Right. It's just so weird.
I mean, I feel like
different.
Huh?
Bill's different. He's different
okay,
now.
Okay, but like, it's nice that you found somebody.
Right.
But I'd recommend like having her stay out of the work stuff.
It's power of the P, Greg.
I understand what you keep saying that.
But do we have the physical emails? I don't subscribe to The Athletic. It was behind a paywall, unfortunately. Yes. Like, is there anywhere else I could see said emails?
We'll present them to you, and you can sit at a table at Brown's while others are trying to eat and read them all for 7 hours.
That would be very nice.
Though Steve Belichick is in fact Bill's son, he should be depicted and represented as his own established credible entity as opposed to an extension of Bill, Jordan Hudson wrote on December 22nd. Mm. It can easily be misinterpreted that Steve is simply benefiting from nepotism, but that is not the case. Steve is fortunate to have learned defensive football strategy from the greatest defensive mind of all time. He has earned his position due to his performance and output, Jordan wrote.
Mm. She's trying to get in with the family.
Right.
Say good things about Steve.
But why?
Because his wife might not like you.
And then Hudson's involvement was minimal with one exception that focused on social media. Quote, is there anyone monitoring the UNC football page for slanderous commentary and subsequently deleting it / blocking users that are harassing Bill Belichick in the comments? Hudson asked on February 13th. On Valentine's Day, Bill Belichick followed up, I cannot believe the UNC would support my being called a, quote, predator, he wrote. It's probably her. But the school did not find a reference to Belichick as a predator, and Evans called it incredibly inappropriate. And as you noted below, UNC would never support such commentary.
How did he have time on Valentine's Day? He should be focusing on love things and love things only on
that's
that
true.
That is true.
All right. We're going to have to take a break. We'll play Hill Notes on the way out, Chime. Is that all right?
Yep. Sounds good, Greg.
Okay. This is Jay from South Boston. Quick. Yeah, Jay, what?
Good morning to the whole crew, man, except Sean. Sean, what type of joke was that? Like, save the basement jokes for your Pokemon convention. Do you mean River Como? Come on. All right?
Hey.
I'm tired of it. Save your basement jokes.
Hey, so I have to save my basement jokes, but Greg's just going to go out and repeat an exact joke that I gave on this program before, and nobody cares. That's cool.
Which was that?
What
was that?
The small, medium, at large.
No. That is a dad joke from the dawn of time.
Yeah, I have said it on this program at least once before.
You're taking credit for an ancient joke.
Oof. Okay, I took a swing and a miss. Like, big deal. Like, it happens.
What's the next one you're taking credit for? Take my wife, please?
Oof.
What?
Comedians don't know that.
You don't know that old classic?
No.
That's from the vaudeville days.
Wow.
Take my wife, please.
Shime. Come vaudeville? On, Greg. Come on, Greg.
What are we doing?
Stealing Shime's jokes now? This is like Cat Williams and
Curtis,
Steve Harvey.
Curtis stole Mego's take as his lead? I mean, what are we doing this morning?
Snakes everywhere.
The worst thing you could do, I heard Damon Wayans talking about that Shannon Sharp. Stealing another comedian's jokes.
I understand that. Is it colder on Stolen Joke Island or on Miss Scoop Island? Well, That's the question.
All I want is for Ken to love me, so I'm trying to take everything Mego says and pot it off as my own.
And let me just say, CFAX 21, Coco, they don't know. Trust me, as a local, that is 100% cool. We had a team function at Brown's, brought 3 coolers filled to the brim and snacks while we waited.
Another A-hole.
I don't think you bring snacks.
Success.
You don't bring food to a restaurant.
Success.
All right. Hill Notes next.